Welcome to On the Other Side, where we talk crypto, culture, and society, and how crypto might shape society and change how real humans live their actual lives. Every week, we have on cool people from the crypto world to talk about what they're building and what the implications of that might be for real human beings. Before we hop into the show, I want to give a quick thank you to the first sponsor of On the Other Side, Rabbit Hole. Rabbit Hole is allowing users to earn crypto while they explore the weird world of Web3, guiding new users down the crypto rabbit hole in a curated way to make sure that people coming into the space are not only using positive sum protocols, but are also starting to build their on-chain resume as they do it. So the longer-term vision for Rabbit Hole is building essentially the open credentialing system for Web3. To build that credentialing system, it's important that they're decentralized. And so the Pathfinder program is paving the way for decentralizing Rabbit Hole and creating an open system built by the community, not by a single team. If you're interested in learning more about Rabbit Hole, check out Rabbit Hole at rabbithole.gg. You can also check them out on Twitter, rabbithole_gg. And if you're interested in learning more about the Pathfinder program, which is the first step to the Rabbit Hole DAO, you can check it out at rabbithole.gg/pathfinder. All right, let's hop into the show. I am here with Simona Pop. Simona, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and I'm delighted to finally be here chatting.
Yes, I cannot wait to chat about some of the things that are on your mind. Before we get into all of that, do you want to give a little bit of background on you, how you felt on the crypto rabbit hole? You're sort of an OG in the crypto space, so I'm super excited to chat, but want to give a little bit of background for anybody who doesn't know what you've been working on and your story in crypto.
Of course. So I kind of started, you know, just circling that rabbit hole around 2015, when I started with a little bit of investing in crypto, very, very light, and kind of didn't necessarily give it as much attention at the time. It was just something that I was exploring. I always kind of, particularly with tech, I always like to poke around a little bit, have a little try out. And then kind of it kind of went away from my field of vision until 2017, when it kind of grabbed me, I guess, by the proverbial lapels. I don't know. Was I wearing lapels? Probably not. But it was kind of like the sudden realization that there were a lot of people building very cool stuff. And I had this moment of kind of this penny dropping, or this token dropping, of just, why am I doing things in Web2 when I could be over there in that fun kind of realm, building this like complete redesign of the world as we know it. So I quickly rushed over and, you know, just properly dove in then. And that's how I came to co-found the Bounties Network, which were the creators of the Standard Bounties Protocol. Gitcoin sits on top of that protocol, even though they've kind of modified it a little bit now for their bounties. But really, the main exploration there and what we wanted to do with that project is very much go broad in exploration and experimentation. What could you do with a bounty as a format, particularly as an incredibly powerful payments mechanism across different verticals? So we went incredibly, incredibly broad. We did bounties for social impact and research and design and art and music and everything under the sun, and really experimenting with a lot of the things that you now see as kind of standard tooling for our Web3 economy. And at the time, we were very, very early. We were doing things that people weren't necessarily thinking about in a we can do this stuff now kind of dynamic. And that was for many reasons. You know, that was for the wallets had to be better, and a whole off ramps, on ramps, a whole host of different things. But that experimentation really led us to some incredible, not only IRL kind of impact projects, but also a lot of relationships built in the ecosystem. And that's something that I've continued doing throughout my time in the space, is building those relationships and really kind of creating these new ways of collaborating, stacking different elements of crypto functionality into, again, creating this IRL type experience. So as a result of that, I was involved in Earn As You Learn. I created these Earn As You Learn models of Intro to Web3 kind of workshops that I ran across the ETH Global Circuit in 2018, 2019. I am part of the lead kind of group for DEF CON scholars, same for ETH Denver scholars. A big, big piece for me is the education and the accessibility of the Web3 space for everybody, not the select few. And really everything that I've kind of done since has been, and I've done many things. I was kind of thinking about doing a link tree, but I think it's going to be such a giant tree that it's like going to be like a Sequoia vibe, but not the VC. Anyway, so a lot of stuff that essentially is all centered around how can we make this new, redesigned, empowering kind of economy accessible for everybody, very much empowering for everybody. And, you know, my work now as community strategist for Status is very much based on that. It's how do we bring this technology on this mobile first kind of thinking, the privacy first kind of thinking, the decentralized goodness that we really want people to be able to shift towards, and also open those gates to an open source economy that allows, again, everybody to tap into this modular kind of tooling that then comes with very easily accessible, you know, documentation and being able and empowering people to just create their own solutions for whatever it is that they want, right? And also, obviously, tap into the resources that come with that. So, all in all, and now I'm also co-organizing LizCon, going to be a conference in October in Lisbon, part of Lisbon Blockchain Week. And the whole purpose with that and the reason why I wanted for us to organize it is because I really want it to be a celebration of our culture. I think, you know, we see this meme a lot, came for the ETH, stayed for the culture. It is absolutely true. I think that culture is something that we absolutely must preserve and also infuse into everything that we do, because it's an incredibly, incredibly inspiring and empowering way of thinking. And it certainly has done those things for me. So I would love to be able to continually usher more people into, or initiate more people into this culture.
Hell yeah. I will be in Lisbon, and I cannot wait for it. One of the things that I love about conferences like that and conversations with people building in Web3 more broadly, and I think you're sort of getting at this, is this idea of how do we redefine these economic models that we currently use for essentially measuring value and success in Web2? And it feels like sometimes Web3 does adopt those same models where you're maximizing for money, which I know you've thought a lot about, you know, the implications of that and other things to think about. One of the things that I loved that I think you said on a podcast, maybe it was a tweet, was basically this idea of optimizing for human thriving instead of money.
Yes.
Can you talk more about that and your thought process there?
Sure. Here it is for the next 10 hours. I can talk about it. So, basically, like, the whole idea with the economy, the way that it's been, or certainly economic thinking, has always been somehow around this idea that we can grow GDP to infinity and beyond, which is obviously impossible, but nobody's ever thought about that, right? Everybody's growth, 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 but nobody has ever thought, okay, but what are the implications of that? Is that even possible? How long can we sustain this growth? And everything that comes from that question that we have progressively seen throughout the decades, this obsession with money, which let's remember is merely a measurement tool. That is how we measure resource and natural resource and value, right? It's just a unit of measurement. But somehow, again, throughout the decades and generations after generations, we've come to think about that as the end goal. And it's almost like you go out for a meal and you eat the menu. So it's like, that's the food. It's not the food. It's just the thing that says that's what the food is. And so I think because we have done that we've really just gone on this incredibly growth-obsessed, like mindless growth trajectory where we haven't necessarily thought about, okay, but what does that mean for humans? What does that mean for the environment? What does that mean for sustainability? What does that mean for a whole host of other things that really in this trajectory that we've been on, human thriving is like at the bottom of the list, right? It's, yeah, you're kind of just here to keep peddling and to do whatever it is that you need to do to get the cash. And I think, again, because of that, we have lost that ability to think about what is good for us as humans and for us as communities and for us as societies, away from this monoculture and obsession with money. Because again, through the kind of money is everything type, I guess, way of thinking or type of economic dynamic, we've also stopped thinking that value is anything but money. And value is so incredibly diverse and so incredibly multifaceted that if you think about flows of value and if you think about what it can mean, there's cultural value. There's, you know, there's so many different types of value that reducing it to just this unit of measure, which is money, is a little bit, you know, misguided, let's say. And I think with Web3, and it's what attracts me and continuously fascinates me and keeps me going in this space, is we are at this time where we have opportunity to really shift from this reductive mindset to one that is much kinder, much more empowering versus this, you know, again, our obsession for generations of pooling power in one place or, you know, taking it for ourselves. And so I kind of hope that what we're doing here is that evolution from where we are now, which is this incredibly mindless kind of growth stance, to this human thriving age. And I think we can do it. Again, it's the tech stack hasn't been this flexible and this accessible in a very long time. And I think now we have that opportunity supported by the technology to move us into that next phase of genuinely human evolution. Like, I think we're there. We just have to make sure that we cross that bridge and we get there and we make sure that we maintain that goal of human thriving and we don't just rebuild the same short-sighted kind of dynamics.
Yeah, I think that's a really impactful way of thinking about Web3. The natural question that comes up for me is, people love measuring things, especially when we're talking about massive human coordination. You know, measuring things is such a useful way to coordinate and collaborate amongst a large group of people. And so maybe this question doesn't make sense, but I'll ask it anyways. How do we think about metrics to measure human thriving? If that's what we really want to optimize, I mean, again, maybe metrics are a broken way of doing things, period, but I'm curious what you think about that.
It's a good question because I've thought about this in, obviously, from the perspective of communities and how do you, you know, measure growth and how do you measure adoption and how do you measure engagement? And dare I utter the, you know, the word marketing, and I tweeted about this today, but I really think that is also evolving. I think Web2 measurements are incredibly, incredibly superficial. And it's almost like, and I'm going to use this analogy, it's almost going to the doctors and they just, you know, weigh you and, you know, check your height. And then they just say, yes, you're healthy, off you go. versus going for a checkup that essentially looks at the whole organism. Is it functioning properly? Are things communicating properly? Are things collaborating? Because at the end of the day, our bodies are the pinnacle of like well-organized and collaborative dynamics. Mm-hmm. And saying, okay, based on all of that, on all of this in-depth analysis, can we, you know, say that the organism is healthy? And I feel that is where, again, Web3 is steering us towards, because as we're seeing, we're so much more focused on communities, on collaboration versus audiences and, you know, very soulless type quantitative metrics that just very superficially say, yeah, you're doing fine. But in fact, what does fine mean? What value are the people who are involved in whatever it is that you're doing? What value are they getting from being involved? What value are they sharing? It's also this, the way I would again describe it is it's a dialogue. It's a conversation versus a one-way communication, almost like decrees just sent out into the ether, for lack of a better phrasing. But it's just this kind of, here it is, I'm broadcasting something and I don't know whether you get it or not, whether you care about it or not, whether you agree with it or not, whether you like, that really doesn't interest me, I'm just telling you something, versus, which is kind of Web 2 vibes, versus this Web 3 where everything is a conversation, potentially a heated dialogue that might push us further because of that heated dialogue. In all of the communities and in the DAOs that we're seeing, and hopefully we will continue refining and figuring out better ways of doing this in DAOs and in any of our communities, but really that kind of collaborative conversation that will lead us to better outcomes. And that's how I would like the main analogy is that of a healthy organism versus very, very superficial height and weight.
That's super interesting. This reminds me of this idea of networks. I'm reading a book about networks, which I will link in the description of this, but it almost reminds me of, if you think about a network and the nodes and then the connections between nodes, it's almost like in Web 2, we measure the nodes or maybe the size of the network. But in Web 3, we have this ability to measure like the connections between the nodes when it comes to something like conversation, for example, or discussion and collaboration. Like we're really measuring all of these different engagements and ways that the nodes interact with one another rather than just looking at the network as a whole and being like, this is worth this much money. That's a really interesting way to think about it. I had not like thought about that.
And actually, it is very much, and again, I tweeted about this, I can't remember, a few weeks ago or something. It's the evolution as well from mere crowd via group to network, right? So it's, and again, that kind of communication and that type of relational kind of, or relationship is that evolution from crowd where you're passive, you're faceless, you are just an amorphous kind of pool of humans via group, which involves a little bit more of a kind of organization, and then to network. Because again, when you think about network, and particularly when you think about it if from a natural, like what it looks like in nature, complex flow networks are all about communication and value flows. Like how everything moves from one link to the other and back again, almost like a butterfly kind of regenerative vibe versus just like straight down the line from one point to the other. It flows and it ebbs and it goes in loops and it back again and between the different parts of the network. So it moves from passive audience, which was the crowd, into active elements, cells of a meta organism, right? It becomes something that evolves and it breathes and it exists and it grows and it becomes resilient through that diversity and through those flows and through that communication and through that exchange of value. If you think, and this is something that I think I spoke at ETH Denver, when was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I basically gave this, again, this example of the complex flow networks in nature, where when you have diversity, it's an incredibly, incredibly resilient network. And when you have too much efficiency, for instance, which is what I kind of alluded to earlier with the monoculture, monetary monoculture, everything is very, very brittle and everything is very, very fragmented. And a good analogy there is the gray squirrel that basically eats anything and, you know, its population is thriving versus the panda that just eats one thing. And then it's... Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to be more resilient out of the two? And that's what you tend to have. Like, if you look at nature, it's a very, very good guide, nature, in what we should be optimizing for.
Yeah, that's really interesting in the context of, you know, when we think about DAOs and all of these pieces, mm-hmm. where networks are way more resilient only if they are not homogenous. Not only if, but much more so if they're not homogenous.
Of course. Of course. And that's why I think it's so important for us. And again, it's something that I've certainly tried to do as much as possible, is to continuously bring different points of view, different experiences, different ways of looking at things and of designing things, because that's what makes you aware of what could be versus what already is. And you probably also have that curse of knowledge where you've kind of done things in one way and you assume that's just the way it is, and you assume everybody knows what you mean and what you want to achieve, and then you just produce it and then it's like, it's not really something that can facilitate that evolution that we're talking about from where we are now to where we could be. And so variety is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly important, which is why complementary currencies and, you know, this kind of plurality of ways of measuring value is very, very good. Of course, there's wild experimentation right now and there's a token for everything, but I think it's where it leads and where it crystallizes. That's important, right? Experimentation should happen, absolutely. But it's where it leads us and what, you know, the values and the intentions that we baked into it. What does that do? And what does that achieve? And how is that different? And how does it empower more versus, again, just repeat that tendency of pooling power and resource to a very small percentage of participants.
Yeah, I think your point about tokens and other mechanisms for measuring value that are sort of outside of our traditional system mm-hmm. is interesting, particularly when you do think about this context of how can we have more depth yes. in the way that we're measuring value. I am curious how you reconcile that with the fact that a lot of these things still boil down to liquidity on Uniswap, you know, and I'm using that as an example. But no matter what, that is what pays the bills for a lot of people, particularly when you're thinking about people who aren't already super privileged and basically like this homogenous group that has sort of already tended to have the power in Web2. Mm. How do you reconcile those two pieces? Because it really matters a lot more for those people because they don't have the privilege of saying, I want to opt out of this monetary system. And also, it does feel like these tokens that are emerging still do boil down to this financial piece.
Of course, I think the reason why I always say that, you know, this isn't necessarily a revolution, it's an evolution, which means it's going to take a little while, is because when you think of a revolution, and, you know, I grew up in Romania and was there, I mean, I was very young, but when the Romanian Revolution happened, it was merely a change of guard. Nothing really changed in the, let's say, organism of power. It was just, well, let's get rid of this guy. External interests were there, so they just did a quick guard change. And so that's an important piece to remember, because when you just change one piece, it means the rest stays the same. It's like when you have a puzzle and you lose a piece and you replace the piece with the same thing, it has to look and be shaped exactly the same to match the puzzle. You can't fit it in otherwise. But when you talk about evolution, you are literally talking, if we look at, again, nature, how did things evolve? Yes, they took a long time. Because they didn't, like, I think, you know, it's this whole thing of like, fish didn't just grow a leg overnight or whatever, a bird grew gills, however we want to look at it. It didn't happen overnight. And it didn't, and the reason for that is it happened gradually so that the whole thing could function. The whole thing could transform. Versus, again, if a fish grew a leg, what's it going to do? It still has to do the things that it was doing as a fish, but now it has this impediment of a leg. And so with that in mind, you're obviously going to, for a while, work with what you have at your disposal right now. We can't wake up tomorrow and everything is just the way we wanted and everything is sprinkled with Web3. So it's going to take a minute. But what that means is we have to be incredibly, incredibly, like, it's something that I say all the time. It's, if blockchain teaches you anything, it is patience. You have to be patient and you have to make sure that you keep true to the values that we hopefully all of us agree, or a big majority of us agree, are what this new Web3 society, Web3 economy, Web3 world, Web3 whatever is going to be built on. And I think with regards to what you were saying in terms of access, I think what we need is, and again, this is something that I was doing with bounties in those 2018 early, let's say, crypto adoption times, it's diversifying the ways in. Don't just have one entry point. Have multiple. And then let people choose their own adventure. And I've said this so, so many times, but things like earn as you learn, things like being able to do certain tasks that aren't necessarily, you know, technically oriented and contribute, which we're seeing more of now, but it certainly isn't like completely diverse and so many ways of getting involved. We still haven't reached that. But in terms of accessibility, I think the biggest thing that we're doing, and yes, it isn't accessible to everybody yet, but I think it is lowering that point of access, particularly if we continue to diversify the ways in. And I would say that certainly, again, from my experience, you know, I wrote my first blog post on Mirror earlier this year, was an interview with an incredible, you know, human and a super rare artist who started in the Bounties Network community. He was homeless in Phoenix, Arizona, and he messaged me earlier this year in May and told me that he put a deposit down on his first apartment. And it's nothing that we have right now in the Web2 space would ever enable you to go through those steps to get you from that point to this point as quickly and as, I guess, uninhibited in terms of what is there for you to access. If you have no bank account, you're basically out of the traditional economy. If you have no address, you're out of a whole host of different dynamics in Web2 right now, or in just like the socioeconomic dynamics that we have right now. If you don't have a savings account, if you don't have this, if you don't have that, if you don't have that, if you don't look a certain way and all of this, Web3 really does shave all of that away. And what it leaves is opportunities for you to access resource regardless of where you were born, regardless of how privileged you were, regardless of whether you are in the, you know, geographies of plenty and all of that garbage that, again, is completely and utterly devoid of any kind of consideration for human thriving. If we just manage to multiply that type of pathway and keep making it easier and better and quicker and more open to everybody, not just like English speaking participants, I think we can get ourselves in a really, really good place that genuinely shifts us from power to empowerment, from this kind of this that we're just in these cemented lines and have been for ages, and unless you get this opportunity and unless this and unless that and unless this other thing, you're just, you know, confined to a certain lifeline. And it's, yeah, but there's a multitude of different things that you could be doing. And like I say, it's us building those entry points, multiple, easily accessible, modular, choose your own adventure, and then like, we're good.
Yeah. To me, that's what I'm realizing when I think about purpose in my work in Web3. I'm coming to realize that that is one of the biggest things that matters to me.
Yes.
Particularly as I'm thinking about DAOs and things, I'm seeing the impacts of this personally in DAOs that I'm working in. And it is insane to watch that happen and to think about how when we scale this, we really will be leveling the playing field. Yes. In a massive way that has just never been possible before.
And that's the thing. Never lose sight of that. And I think that's the long-term play that we have to consciously keep in our minds as we build the things that we're building and as we develop the things that we're developing and as we grow the things that we're growing, is not lose sight of that, because there are so many distractions. And as you and I were chatting just before we started recording, there is so much going on. And at times it can really drain you of energy because there are all of these, some artifice here and some other thing here and this drama here and like all of this stuff, that it can happen that you lose sight of the long-term goal, which is genuinely evolving us from where we are now to a place where we can just thrive and really for it to be something that that is open to everybody.
Yeah, that's so powerful. I love that. I feel like I'm like hyped. I mean, I'm always hyped about working in Web3, but like after really thinking about it in this context, I'm like, fuck yeah, we gotta go out and build this, because it really does matter. And it's one of those things that I think we do sometimes forget about in crypto, because there's some NFT project that's dropping and you're earning 20,000% APY on some random staking thing, which is great. But this is really, I think, one of the most grounding conversations I've had, because I think this is the most important thing that Web3 will be doing. So I appreciate that perspective. Before we wrap up, so I have a segment at the end of the show that is basically, what is your favorite thing in your wallet? Which seems so superficial now that we're having this conversation in the context of changing the entire sort of like global landscape around work and equality. But nonetheless, what is your favorite thing in your wallet? It can be an ERC-20, NFT, whatever.
I think what I will go with, and this is by no means like a I have many wonderful, wonderful NFTs and works of art and beautiful pieces that I've, again, having been in the space since 2018, I have a few and I've been privileged to collect a few wonderful pieces by wonderful artists. But I would say that it's the NFT of that post that I mentioned on Mirror, that's a snippet of the interview that I had with Brandon, where it's, he says, I am a citizen of Ethereum, not a user. Ethereum is where my friends are. Ethereum is where my job is. Ethereum is where my purpose is. And it's an NFT because obviously you can do the image as an NFT. And I think that was so powerful because it was coming from him. And also it was powerful because Ethereum, it's a part of life. It isn't just a side thing. It isn't just a speculative thing. It isn't just like the flavor of the month or the day or the whatever. It is something that is genuinely, Brandon is integrated into his life and is now just such a big part of his life. And I, you know, I completely agree. I'm fully immersed in Web3 and in Ethereum, and it has given me a lot of things. And so, yeah, that's probably my favorite.
I love that. You've given me chills twice in this episode now. I absolutely love that. And I think that's actually a really good thing to build towards, is like, yes, how can we make sure that the people that are, that Ethereum's impact is that it makes people citizens and not users. That feels like a really important distinction for builders to continue trying to make sure that that's the case. Mm. I absolutely love that. This has been such a wholesome conversation. Where can people find you and what you're working on and get more of this wholesomeness?
Wholesomeness. Yes. Yeah. I'm on Twitter. It's just @sim_pop. And I'm going to put together this link tree, you know, because I was just, yeah, I was having this conversation. And sometimes when I kind of say all of the things that I'm involved in, I just miss off chunks because there are so many things that I think I have embedded myself in, like this this little plate spinning element that is just trying to push the ecosystem forward, and I think hopefully get us into that spot where we are that home for everybody and everybody can be a citizen.
I love that. So if that's done, or I guess when it's done, I'll link the Sequoia link tree in the
oh, Patagonia vibes in that Sequoia tree. So yeah.
I love that. I'll link that eventually and hopefully people can see all of the different things you have your hands on. But really, this was such a good conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It was so good to chat.
Thank you. It was awesome to chat finally. And yeah, yes, hopefully see you in Lisbon, and yeah, excited for the rest of the year in 2022 and beyond.
If you like what you heard, please make sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast. I always forget to do this for podcasts I like, but it's actually super useful. Also, if anything resonated with you, or if you want to continue the conversation, hit me up on Twitter. I'm @ChaserChapman. I absolutely love talking about these things. Thanks again for listening.